I don't think it happened like that. I think it was an evolutionary process. He came in. Matter of fact, a sidebar story, and that is I was cleaning out some old paperwork the other day, and I found a list from, I never thought he would go into this business, frankly, a professional skier or physical therapist or something else. And when he told me he was going to come into it, I started making a list of things that you don't learn in school. And that list is, I don't know, 25 years old now. And I just looked at it and laughed because he does know it all. So it came in. And we were going through some tough times at that time. I said, David, you got to do this. David, you got to do that. So it was an evolutionary process. There was no way when we said, okay, David is really at this point really managing more than I'm managing. You just turn around one day and there you are. It's kind of like watching a flower grow. You don't know what day it buds or what day it does something. It's just a very slow, gradual evolutionary process.
Hello and welcome to the Small Business School. My name is Craig Staley, 20-year retail veteran, e-commerce practitioner, and entrepreneur. Each week, I will interview a new small business owner that we can learn from to take our businesses to the next level. Now, let's go. Have you ever dreamed about what would happen if your business took off in 10, 20, or even 30 years from now? Would your kids want to take over the family business? How would you handle it? Would you be able to fully give up control, step back, and let your kids run it? Well, that's the position that Marty Andersky of Encon Mechanical found himself in years ago when his son David came into the family business. Marty has some practical advice for anyone who finds themselves in the position of handing over the reins of their business to the next generation. Without further ado, Marty and David Andersky. All right, I'd like to welcome my next guests today. They are Marty and David Andersky of Encon Mechanical. How are you guys today?
Great.
We are very well. Thank you for asking.
Nice to meet you guys. Marty, we'll start with you. Can you give us a little bit of your background?
Okay, where do I begin? Begin at the beginning. I started out after engineering school. I wound up spending 2 years in Army Aviation. After Army Aviation, I spent about 3 or 4 years working for other people in the HVAC business. And after that, I decided I could do better than all of them and opened up this company, which presently still exists. That was opened in October of 1968.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And how about you, David?
My background really, you know, I was a kind of quintessential owner's son. I was here high school. I think I was here all the time, it seems like, when I think back. But high school summers, college breaks, and then, you know, morphed into a full-time career in 1993.
So when you were here in high school and college, your dad put you through the ringer and you were doing everything, probably.
The rumors were if I showed up on a job, it was usually going to be a bad day because my father would give me the worst possible assignments that were to be had.
Yep.
So there was no love lost there.
Very hard at doing that.
Learned it all from the ground up.
From driving trucks to digging ditches to whatever needed to be done any time of day.
Perfect. So, Marty, why don't you give us a little bit of more background on the business and kind of how it evolved? And, you know, you talked about starting it because, you know, you're working for somebody else and you thought you could do it better. And what did you see? What potential did you see about starting your own HVAC business?
I just saw a lot of what I conceived at that time was mismanagement and companies that just people going in all kinds of directions, no real unity at the top. The first company I worked for, which really gave me a tremendous opportunity to grow. Well, let me back up a little bit. I started out working for a sales rep company and I learned about the technical side of size and cooling towers and air outlets and what we call then unit ventilators. I'm sure they're still around in schools. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to size that kind of equipment. Then from there, I went to a contracting company, which was in the throes of having some very, very bad jobs, all blinded. It was just a struggle to get them all finished. And it was just a great way to learn because as other people got let go, I was just given more and more responsibility, whether I knew it or not.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, that company just went under. But by then, I was pretty well educated. And I went with one of the principals to another company. and kind of stayed with him until I decided to open up my company. I gave them a year's notice before I left. I told them what my intents were, and it was a great transition. I'm still friendly with the kids' kids to this day.
That's great.
Very pleasant transition. And as I moved from New York to New Jersey, my first major commercial job, by the way, was subcontracting a job they had in a big government computer facility.
So did you start out always doing commercial HVAC, or did you do some residential too?
Well, that's a very good question, because in order to get financing, Trane at that point was looking to get into the residential market, and they developed what they call a dealer development program, where they would train you and give you a territory, but the deal was that you were going to do, you were going to bring them up residentially. And we did that for a number of years, and it just wasn't where my head was at.
Mm-hmm.
Gradually, we just transitioned back into the commercial market. I learned the residential market. I was out every night selling residential units and putting them in. A lot of marketing, a lot of advertising.
Sure.
Some kind of radio interviews at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't what I wanted to do. So gradually I shifted back to commercial work, which is where my head was at, and love is to this day.
That's great. So over the years, either one of you, what's some of the favorite projects that you've worked on? Is there any that come to mind?
Oh, David, you want to take a shot and then I'll go, or?
Yeah. So Craig, you know, in recent years, we've been fortunate to be involved with some bigger projects, which was kind of new experience for me personally, but we had recently done a lot of work at the building in Holmdel called Bellworks, where when we got involved with it, it was a very vacant building. One of the largest vacant buildings in North America. And I was able to do one of my first helicopter rigs, which was really exciting because saw pictures of me being involved with one when I was maybe 5 or 6.
Uh-huh.
But this was one I was actually able to be involved with from the management and the entire side of it. So that was really an interesting few hours of what we were able to accomplish.
Wow.
Yeah, it's funny because I just walked up to our service department, which is now about 150 feet from where my office is, to give you an idea how we've grown. And 150 feet was bigger than my whole office starting out.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many years ago, and I don't remember how many, my first major design building was a large company, a large public company, where they had ground the lens, whatever the right word is, for the Hubble telescope.
Oh, wow.
And I went up front to look at something in the service department. Lo and behold, they were renewing their service contract.
Oh, just today?
Yeah, just today.
That's awesome.
A lot of long-term accounts we had. I started out doing a lot of tennis courts. Those people have retired and sold.
Mm-hmm.
And I really learned every type of job by just doing everything on the job myself, from designing it to managing it and watching what goes on. And I love, people get bored driving with me because when as we're driving north, south, east, or west, I'll point out a building and say, see that building? We did it. And let me tell you about it. And then when I look over there, they've nodded off and they're going to sleep.
They fell asleep about 5 minutes ago, huh?
Yeah. I like to say that I don't think there's anybody in New Jersey who doesn't know some building we've done or been in some building we've done.
That's impressive. Well, over a 50-year history, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, Marty, you started the business in 1968. I think I read you did the start was a single humidifier job for maybe $100. And now you have over 100 employees. You're designing major HVAC systems. Looking back to when you started the business, is this where you expected to be 50 years from then?
No, I don't think anybody ever knows where they're going to be 50 years. We all hope we're still going to be alive.
Yeah.
That was never a thought. It was always a thought of how do I get through the next day? Then, and we just had a meeting, a management meeting a little while ago, and David made a statement that's so true. We always seem to be one person away from really getting where we have to go. And that's the way it started out. First, I said, well, if I'm calling out, have somebody answer the phone, so I don't have to, way before the technology we have now. So let me hire somebody to answer the phone. Then I said, gee whiz, I really need somebody who can bend the sheet metal in the shop.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That person. And then I can't go out on every service call, which I was really doing at some point. Let me hire a service technician. And then, gee, I really need somebody to help me estimate. So let me hire an estimator. And every time I did, I said, okay, now we're okay. And David now, who really does all the management, he'll tell you how many people we have in the office. I have no idea anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. And I think is maybe the secret is do the right job for the right people at the right price, and you will continue to grow. I don't know.
Yeah, that is true. There's always, you know, you think you're in the right spot, and then there's this next thing that pops up as you grow, I'm sure.
Yeah.
David, you said you came into the business in 93. You know, a few years later in 99, you were named president. What were a couple things that maybe your dad did to set you up to help continue to build the company and have success?
You know, I think what was instilled then, and I think really is part of our reputation now, is, you know, our word matters. We're only as good as our last job. And, you know, price is important, but if we don't deliver what we're telling our customers, you know, we don't market. We're word of mouth. Our mm-hmm. customers use us because we're good at what we do. We do what we say we're going to do. And if there's an issue, we stand behind it. You know, it's not uncommon for us to have to warranty or be asked to warranty something well after its point. And if it's a workmanship issue or something we didn't do right the first time, we stand behind that. And that matters with the clientele that we worked with for many, many, many years.
That's great. When you took over as president, what were maybe a couple initial strategies that you decided to enact?
You know, we were very, very good firefighters back then.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a great job of responding to, but not really knowing that what we were going to do tomorrow could be the same thing as what we need to do today. So mm-hmm. really putting in the processes and following, because, you know, when you're a certain size, you could do it all, you know, on the back of a napkin, so to speak.
Sure.
But as you grow, that no longer happens. And building the foundation for the growth with the right people and the right processes so we can really grow the way we did.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you have to be able to, as you backfill people or hire new people, they have to know what your way of doing things are, and having those processes for sure important. You know, Marty, you see a lot of businesses where it's family-owned businesses. The first generation starts the business and, you know, eventually they decide to hand control over to the next generation. And, you know, in a lot of cases, maybe they're making judgments of what the next generation's doing. You know, what advice would you give to other founders who are in your position and maybe ready to hand over the business to the next generation?
Yeah, I think the key is in your statement when they decide to hand control over. Well, if you're going to hand control over, then you have to do just that. You have to hand control over. You have to recognize the difference in the styles and what happens. And David went on the non-technical end in terms of he wanted to build the business.
Mm-hmm.
He has an amazing understanding at a higher level of all these systems, how they work, how the controls work, and everything else. But he decided not to get into the minutiae of engineering and sizing things and how to size ductwork and do things like that. But his attitude more was, I can get somebody to do that for me. I'll just manage this business. And it was exactly the opposite of what I did.
Sure.
I recognized that and take it for what it was, as an opportunity for growth, not giving up control.
Did you find as you made that transition and kind of stepped out of that larger leadership role, was there anything particular you had to do, you know, as far as directing staff his way or changing things to physically kind of be out of the limelight?
I don't think it happened like that. I think it was an evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm.
He came in. Matter of fact, a sidebar story in that is I was cleaning out some old paperwork the other day, and I found a list from, I never thought he would go into this business, frankly, a professional skier or physical therapist or something else. And when he told me he was going to come into it, I started making a list of things that you don't learn in school. And that list is, I don't know, 25 years old now. And I just looked at it and laughed because he does know it all. So he came in and we were going through some tough times at that time. I said, David, you got to do this. David, you got to do that. So it was an evolutionary process. There was no way when we said, okay, David is really at this point really managing more than I'm managing. You just turn around one day and there you are. It's kind of like watching a flower grow. You don't know what day it buds or what day it does something. It's just a very slow, gradual evolutionary process.
I think that in itself is probably a great takeaway. You know, there's not a, okay, let's set a date on the calendar. You just kind of know.
No, if you want to get out, maybe you set the day in the calendar. But I think if you're going to do that, you better do it and not come in Monday morning and say to your next generation, hey, I wouldn't have done it that way. But so I think once you do that, you're creating a really adversarial situation that can never work. That's probably why a lot of these family businesses can't manage it.
Sure. So kind of changing gears here, are there any tools or systems that you guys have found particularly helpful in business that maybe other business owners might be interested in?
You know, Craig, I think it's really embracing and not being afraid of technology, you know, especially in light of what's occurred here in the country and on the globe. Being we a few years ago started to do ERP stuff where we were more server-based, more web-based, more cloud-based. And if we had not gotten to that point to pivot to a completely virtual environment in March, would have been impossible. Mm. Everything for us at this point is paperless, cloud-based. Our mechanics in the field upload their drawings. We do as-builds. We do all real-time information. And 3, 4, 5 years, the technology didn't exist, and I think we were all too afraid of it. Mm-hmm. So not being afraid of embracing the technology that's out there and really leveraging it so you could do more with less or really leverage your talents.
So does that technology for you guys help you as far as servicing the units as well, kind of lets you know where issues might be lying and you can virtually see that?
You know, it's funny because the world of YouTube has made it where technicians that normally would not know how to do something could do it as now a reference point or a resource. But yeah, we're using cloud storage for all the information. Guys are uploading information in real time. Our dispatchers, our service managers can see exactly what's happened that day. And then it transmits all the way through to payroll, to HR, to accounting, you know, in a very, very seamless manner.
That's great. So, you know, either one of you can answer this, both of you. What would you say has been your biggest challenge that you faced in business, and how did you overcome it?
I think the biggest challenge is finding the right people. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of smart people here, a lot of very technical people, but we really spent a lot of time and energy and resources working on our culture, mm-hmm. making sure that when it's a hard, long day, that people at the end of the day are still willing to work together and communicate through whatever challenge occurred. We're fortunate. We're very, very busy right now. We had about 100 people working this weekend and communicating who was where, who had to go where, and what their tasks were for the day in a hot environment. And, you know, after a long, hot summer, mm-hmm. making sure everyone still wants to be able to be helpful to each other in a trade where, again, it's very, very tedious what they're doing.
Sure.
You know, I'll answer that kind of with a different spin on it.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I had a very close friend of mine who was an MBA and has done very well buying and selling businesses. And I invited him in. We had lunch together. He looked around and he said to me, I wouldn't take this business if you gave it to me. He says, it's just too people intense. It's not the kind of a business that anybody would take unless they really just could the field and they knew it. It's mm-hmm. not the kind of business that you run like a candy store or any type of business is really predictable by the numbers. It's very, very hard to do. And the key is because the people are such a large percentage of our sales, much more so than most other businesses. And they're also it's also unpredictable because they are not working in your factory where you can go back there and easily measure what they do. And their jobs are not routine. Therefore, mm-hmm. you don't have the right people who really want to give you a fair day's work with a whole lot of thinking on their part for their pay. You just won't make it. It just cannot happen. And that's evidenced by what we call boomerangs. We've had a whole bunch of people, like anybody else, they leave because they think they have a better opportunity or something happens. A very large percentage of them come back after working someplace else for 6 months, a year, even 2 years. And they're the best people we have because they really they tell the other people, hey, you don't realize how good you've had it. Mm-hmm. Until we go someplace else. The problem is so many of our people have been with us so long. I'm talking 40 years or more.
That's great.
But they forget. They forget versus the other people. And when the boomerangs come back, they sort of spread the word a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sometimes takes someone to leave to find out the grass isn't greener on the other side.
Absolutely.
Kind of turning it around a little bit, what would you say has been the best moment in your business's history so far?
The best moment?
Mm-hmm.
My point of view, looking back, was having David come into it. No question about it.
That's great.
This may be when I leave.
let you relax a little bit.
Yeah, I relax when I work.
Yeah. How about you, David?
Craig, I would say, you know, similarly, it's to be able to be in a family business and work well together and still be able to enjoy holidays and, you know, the Thanksgiving dinner table is something that's rather unique in a generational business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got a lot of great people here, but working with family that you can still like at the end of the day is very, I think, a very unique position.
Marty, who do you consider a mentor, and what would you say is maybe the most important lesson they taught you?
I think I had several going back when I worked way, way back for another company. And they had staff engineers there that taught me a lot. I was always concerned with rules of thumb, and these guys taught me a lot. And I had other people there who were exactly the opposite, people who were able to get out on a job site and get people to do what had to be done and were able to handle a crisis well. So I've had a lot of people out there I've learned from, and I think that's one of the secrets. None of us can get there by ourselves. We need to really watch and mimic. We think they know what they're doing. There's nobody out there who hasn't done it before us. Learn from them. But I don't think there's any one specific person who helped me. And all those people I refer to now are long on the other side of the grass, unfortunately.
How about you, David? Any mentors that come to mind?
You know, Craig, I've been very fortunate, like I said, to spend the entire part of my professional career working with my father. So he's been a huge mentor. And then you got to go outside. You know, I've done a lot in different networking groups, both in industry and out of industry, where they teach you what to do, what not to do. And you get to really do a lot of exchange of ideas with, you know, successful people that really help guide and mold and help get you to the finish line a lot faster than doing it by yourself.
They've already learned the lessons and you're getting kind of the quick version of it.
Yeah, or you learn it together and you talk through, you commiserate mm-hmm. and your challenges together. And the one thing I did learn is, you know, successful people are very willing and eager to give you their stories so that they can make your path better for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you hang out with them and ask them questions and then just listen.
That's smart. Marty, I'm going to have to ask you this one because you were there on day one. If you could hop into a time machine and go back to that first day that you launched your business, what advice would you give your past self?
I think pay more attention to the things that David's focused on. My mm-hmm. was focus on the jobs, make the job come in. If the job came in, you estimate it right and managed it right and you made money on it, everything else would take care of itself. And mm-hmm. it just does it. You need that, but that just has to be one spoke on the wheel. And it is not the entire wheel. It's far from it. And that's the advice I would absolutely give myself. Learn to pay attention to the business, not specifically the jobs themselves.
That's great. So, David, where can our listeners find out more about your business? Social media, website, that type of stuff?
Yeah, we're, you know, we have a website at www.nconmech.com. We are on the social media channels from LinkedIn to Facebook and Instagram. So they can look us up and read more about our stories and what we've done.
Well, it's really impressive the business that you guys have grown. And I definitely appreciate you guys coming on with me today.
Thank you very much, Craig.
It's been a pleasure, Craig.
Marty said it so simply. If you're going to hand over the business, hand it over. I think it's easier said than done for some people who have built a business over decades. They have a certain way of doing things and they expect the next generation to do it their way. I loved how Marty realized that David wasn't as interested in getting into the details of each job. He was more interested in designing and improving the processes and running the business. Kudos to both David and Marty for recognizing each other's strengths and being able to work together to continue to grow a successful family business. If you're a small business owner or looking to start a business, join the Small Business School Facebook group. It's a private community of people focused on helping each other grow their businesses. Join the community and let's help each other take our businesses to the next level. We'll see you there. If you'd like to learn more about our guest today or be a future guest on the Small Business School, go to craigsdaily.com/podcast for more info. And of course, it would mean the world to me if you'd click subscribe or write a review for the Small Business School in your podcast app of choice. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.